Good morning. This is Sunday, December 23rd, 2012. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. In just a moment on Weekend Ozarks at Large, a preview of how downtown Fayetteville will celebrate the last night of 2012.
And other things on this morning's edition, how Gibson Baskets has been making baskets for the last, 50 years?
120. Yeah, I know.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
540 Express sings carols in the KUAF lobby.
Right.
And Becca Martin Brown on what to do between now and New Year's.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And with us inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, three of the organizers of Last Night 2012 in Fayetteville, Erica Wilhite, Lauren Embry, David Embry. Thank you all very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Last night is on New Year's Eve. It's the last night of the year, correct?
Yes.
And this is the second last night.
Yes, this is the second time we have done Last Night Fayetteville. We survived last year and decided to bring it back this year.
Has it grown since last year?
Most definitely. As of today, we are about three times the amount of tickets sold at the same time last year. So not only is that seem to be growing, but the amount of programming that we're offering, the number of artists and performers that will be there for the evening has grown. We've added probably around 8 to 10 new acts, more than we had last year.
And the production budget's grown.
Says David, who knows a thing or two about production. What does a growing production budget mean?
That means that this year we'll actually be paying closer to market value for the products that we receive. And hopefully it'll mean a better show on the main stage and on the auxiliary stages as well.
So where is this main stage?
The main stage is in the Town Center this year, in addition to the Kid Zone and the puppet preparations for our giant puppet parade. We feel that this will bring everybody a little closer together. Parents will be able to check out some really fine talent on a professionally produced stage and drop their kids off next door and not feel that they're that far out of the way.
The lineup of entertainment has a very local feel.
It's all local. The festival is really a celebration for Fayetteville of the Fayetteville performing arts scene, which is why I love it so much, being a performing artist. My group, the Artist Laboratory Theater, and a number of other performing arts groups, comedy, live music, dance, will all be featured and showcased at Last Night.
I think a lot of people remember that there was First Night, now Last Night, and it has come back to downtown. The last few First Nights had migrated away from downtown.
Yes, well, when First Night happened, First Night started in 1997, and they started their first event on the square up until about 2007, I think. They did 10 years on the square, and then their 2008 and 2009 events, they moved to the mall. A lot of you will remember that the square kind of went through this downturn a little bit, where shops were moving out, but then experienced a real big upturn. So within that time that they went away to the mall, there was a lot of resurgence going on the square. We had a lot of new boutiques and shops and cafes that were opening. So when we were planning this event last year, we thought it only made sense to return the celebration downtown since we had a new community.
And all of the new boutiques and the new community there has been open and welcoming?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of our sponsors, the majority of our sponsors actually, are all businesses that are located around the square or downtown.
And many of those businesses are also the performance venues. So the only big stage, so to speak, is at the Town Center, but everything else is in a boutique or a law office or a cafe. So it's very fringy in that way.
Give us some examples of who might be in a law office or in a boutique.
Our folk stage is at Odom Law Office, and that's a tradition that's carrying over from First Night. It will be Emily Cates and the Outside Lines, as well as Still on the Hill. They'll be there all night. The Underground, Fayetteville Underground, is also a venue for us. It's the jazz stage. The Mustache, like she said, is a sponsor, but they're also the comedy club, so to speak. Fun Bags will be performing there, the Improv improv group, as well as the Comedians of Northwest Arkansas. Matthew Miller's studio is the Sheet Fort venue, so we'll be building a giant sheet fort by the Artist Laboratory Theater, but we'll also be featuring performing acts such as Fayetteville Word Wars and another improv group called Sound Effects. Fresco Cafe is going to host our dancers. We'll have Terra Nova Tribal Ballet dancers as well as Blossoms Burlesque.
And now that's an adult only.
That is adult only.
So you're mentioning all these different shows in these various venues. Will one ticket get you into
all of
these events?
Yeah, we have a couple of different ticket options this year, as we did last year. The general admission ticket is $10 in advance, and it'll be $15 the night of, and those are for people 12 and older, and that will get you access to all the performance venues. We have a child's ticket available for $5, and that's for kids 2 to 12. And then we have a VIP ticket this year, which is $50, and includes access to the BHK VIP lounge at BHK Cafe.
David, you mentioned the production for the main stage. Is there anything that has to be done with Mustache? Because that's a boutique, and it's got, you know, merchandise everywhere. So if you're going to have fun bags there.
Part of the appeal for some of these smaller venues is that we don't have to do production, that it's really raw and personal. You're in very intimate spaces right up close with the performers. And while I am heavily involved in the main stage, I kind of like that aspect that you're actually hearing someone's voice touch your ear. It's not synthesized or modified in any way. It's you and the performers, and it's a very close personal experience.
These are drop-ins, right? I mean, you can bounce from place to place to place?
We'll have a program, a paper program, that will tell you what is playing at all times in the night. And at every venue, we hope to also give you a listing of what can be seen at what time at that venue. You will go from performance to performance. You can stay as long as you like at a certain venue, but we want you to travel and bounce from place to place.
It's like a buffet of some of the best art that Fayetteville has to offer.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask, so what happens at midnight? It's a New Year's Eve celebration.
Well, it's another tradition that we're bringing back from First Night, and one that has gotten national attention, actually, and that's our famous Hog Drop Countdown to Midnight. And this year, we're partnering with the Fayetteville Underground. They have actually purchased one of the Pigsubition pigs that are all around town, the pigs that artists have painted for Ozarks and the Ozark Literacy Council. Well, the Fayetteville Underground has actually purchased one and has generously allowed us to use it as our hog drop this year. So we're getting the fire department to raise and lower the pig during our countdown. So that's our midnight countdown. And then right after we say Happy New Year, the fireworks start. So we'll have about a 10-minute fireworks show that will happen immediately at midnight. So it's just a really big finale event that welcomes the new year.
And that fireworks event, that experience is free to the public. So everything on the square is not ticketed.
If it's outside, if it's accessible to public eyeballs, it's free.
That's right.
Right. And that includes our giant puppet parade, too, is another first night tradition, something that is really unique to Fayetteville. But that event starts at 8 o'clock, and that's another free event for the public. So you can come out, watch the lights of the Ozarks, grab a bite to eat, watch the puppet parade, and stay for
the countdown. Or better yet, you can participate. It's primarily volunteer-driven, so if you'd like to get involved, we readily welcome the public to come in.
And the main stage will include Threepenny Acre.
Yes.
Randall Shreve.
And Sideshow. And the funk band Groovement. Another local favorite.
Speaking of Sheet Fort, in case someone hears that and doesn't quite know what that is, Erica.
The Artist Laboratory Theater builds a giant sheet fort. This is not our first sheet fort. It's a venue that we build, and we have built several times at this venue at Matt Miller's studio. It is, just as it sounds, a giant sheet fort, and inside we have comfortable, intimate seating, bean bags, and camping chairs. And we, the Artist Laboratory Theater, perform a show, and this year it's Found Fayetteville. It's a a compilation of found text, random, you know, pieces of stories that we've collected, as well as Craigslist ads, Fayetteville flyer comment threads, things that we find uniquely Fayetteville, and we dramatize it. And it is our homage to our darling little city. But that's the show we're doing at the Sheet Fort. Everything else occurring in the Sheet Fort that night, it will also, everything in that venue will be in the Sheet Fort.
So does the planning for the 2013 last night begin, what, January 2nd?
It's already begun.
It's already begun.
We've already been talking about what we're going to do for next year. And, we started talking about that probably a couple months ago.
Oh,
so as
wow.
we go along with this process, we, you know, things that we're not able to do this year, we say, well, next year we'll be able to do this. So we're looking to grow the event even more next year.
New Year's Eve is a holiday. It's one, perhaps more than any other, that's synonymous with, you know, having a good time, taking time off. David, you've been at Walton Arts Center for about 1,000 straight days now, getting shows together. Lauren, you have your own business. Erica, you've been on the road doing different things and putting different things together. Why work New Year's Eve?
Good question.
Love.
Love.
It's Fayetteville.
Yeah. It's something, last year, it was last April, I believe, April of 2011, when Eric and I got together and started talking about this concept for this festival and bringing back what was here. And I personally saw a lack of community events available in Fayetteville. And last year when the fireworks started and I looked back and I saw the square just completely crowded with people, that was the moment for me that said, this is why we did this. And we had around 3,000 people all around the square gathered together at that moment. And that was the moment for me that said, we're definitely doing this again next year.
Yes, and it's also a way to showcase the talent here. Not everyone knows that once a month you can catch fun bags, you know. There are regularly performing groups in town, and this is almost like a commercial for them. And to showcase their talent is really, for me, the best part about it. It's just to get the word out that there is more to do in Fayetteville you may not know about.
We also pay out close to $12,000 in artist contracts.
We're over $12,000 for this year.
and that goes directly to working artists' pockets who need it. And
if people want to know more?
They can go to our website, which is lastnightfayetteville.com, or they can find us on Facebook at Last Night Fayetteville.
David Embry, Lauren Embry, Erica Wilhite, thank you all very much.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Happy New Year, yes.
Happy New Year.
For the first time last month, the University of Arkansas Ballroom and Latin Dance Club took to the floors of the Ohio Star Ball, the largest collegiate ballroom dancing competition in the nation. I spoke with members of the team, including one who won Best Newcomer International Waltz and Tango. Here's that report. Ballroom dance dates back to the Renaissance period, has ties in the Victorian era, with modern ballroom rooted in the early 20th century. TV shows like So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars have helped to revive ballroom in the 21st century. While it is the oldest sport at the University of Arkansas, the Ballroom and Latin Dance Club wasn't formed until 2009. This year, 2012, being the first time the club entered the U.S. National Collegiate Dance Competition. Laura Lynn Ramilly, a junior, is the president of the club. She started dancing when she was 17.
I started because my grandmother was a competitive dancer, and she got me into it, paid for my first dance lessons, and I fell in love with it right away. It's one of those things that it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter what you look like. You get out there and start dancing, and you work at it, and you realize that you've got some potential and can be good at it. And it's a huge ego boost. It makes you feel beautiful no matter what you look like, because you know how to get out there, you know how to move. And it's just one of those things that really stuck with me, and it changed my life a lot.
She enjoys it so much that she wants to pass it along to others. She's training to be a teacher and is already doing some teaching, like this social class where I met her. The competition team is limited to those that are advanced enough and willing to compete. This social class provides instruction and a taste for beginners. but it's also a chance for competition team members to learn something different. Competition dances are international dances, whereas the dances taught here are social dances, American-style dances that are good for going out dancing, a basic step that can be added to or mixed up for fun.
International is not really like that. You have set patterns that you learn, so it makes it a lot harder to start up with a new partner you've never danced with, like at a social dance. So you usually work with just your partner for international, not always, but usually. It's kind of different in the aspects of what you use it for. International is going to be more competition, and American is going to be more social.
Last month, 10 members of the competition team attended the Ohio Star Ball in Columbus, the biggest ballroom competition in the United States. Helping out with the social class is sophomore Sarah Ping. She and her partner were named newcomer international champions in both the waltz and the tango, though she just started dancing in January.
Yeah, I know. I was really excited and rather surprised, actually.
You had done other dance. Ballet,
I did
jazz.
Like every little girl does, and when they are little, I did ballet and a little bit of jazz. But I quit around 7th grade, but...
She says she liked the amount of dance that she got. It taught her how to move and some rhythm. But it wasn't too much that she got so strict about it. Inspired by movies, she always thought ballroom dancing was cool.
It's always kind of been on my bucket list to learn, and one of those things I've just always wanted to know how to do. And I heard about it my fall semester of my freshman year, but I was a little bit too nervous to go because I was worried that everyone would be super good and I just would have never have danced before. But
with encouragement from friends, she finally got the courage to go to the social class. Ballroom came surprisingly easy to her.
I was rather surprised at how easy it was, because when I watched some of the people who have been dancing in the competition team have been dancing for quite a long time, and they would do all these fancy moves, and I would just get there starstruck and worried that I will never be able to do that. But when they break it down and show you the basic moves, and it's just three steps or something, and I'm always like, oh, okay, this is really easy. So it's really easy if you know the mood of the dance, and if you know a basic beat and you can like basically dance and you know a rhythm, it's pretty easy to pick up.
The waltz, a category she won at competition, is her favorite. It goes like this.
Yeah, the 1-2-3, 1-2-3, okay. 1-2-3. Yeah, just the one that they're spinning in circles and with the big dresses and everything. That's the one that I love the most.
A biology major, she's thinking about becoming a veterinarian and doesn't plan on competing professionally, but rather just do it socially for the rest of her life.
And since ballroom is more of something that you would associate with older people knowing foxtrot and all of that, and just watching some of them after they're like 60s and stuff and they know all these moves, I'm like, that's what I want to do. I want to be like the old couple that's knowing how to do it in the back, doing how to do foxtrot and all of that in the corner and everything. That was just something I'd always want to do, and just something fun to do.
Engineering major and fellow competition team member Ethan Glace also hopes to dance for fun for the rest of his life. His inspiration comes from watching a movie with his mother.
She just wanted me to learn. She didn't want me to be like the awkward guy or anything like that. I remember when Hitch came out and, you know, it has that really awkward dance scene. He's like, Ethan, I don't want you to be that. So my mom always wanted me to dance and didn't really latch on to it until I got into college.
He says dancing is a great stress reliever, and he likes knowing what he's doing at weddings. He also enjoys meeting people. He met his current girlfriend in the ballroom club. He danced with her at the competition in waltz, tango, and quickstep, making it past the first few rounds. One of just four guys on the team, he had to dance with other partners as well. As it isn't as popular with men, I asked him if he catches any grief from his non-dancing buddies.
It might not be the most manly thing in the world, but I have a blast with it. My brothers are always asking me to teach them whenever they do that. And, you know, even though my friends do give me a little bit of flack, whenever I'm out there on the dance floor, they're always like, he's like, way to go, dude.
As there were so few guys, Laurelyn Ramley had to dance lead for some of the dances of the competition. For this, she wore black slacks and a white shirt, like the men. But for many of her dances, she wore a green gown with black lace and black fringe. I asked how they pick out a dress for ballroom dances.
We actually didn't just pick them out. We had them made specifically for each of the girls. And what happened is me and our coach, Brandy, went through and we looked at designs that would flatter each body type and made sure the girls liked it. And the two of us went to the store and we started looking at fabric, and we picked fabric that fit personalities. It's got to be the right kind of material, so that kind of limited things too, but it took a while. Each of those dresses is tailored to the individual.
As you can hear, they dance to many different types of music. It was the same way at the competition. The collegiate dancers competed during the day, leaving the evenings to the professionals. The group was able to watch them perform. Laura Lynn's favorite couple was the World Latin Champion Duo.
It's incredible when you're watching the pros because they're so good, you can't tell them apart. You can't tell who's better than the other ones. This one couple stood out from the rest of them. And so, like, at that level, to stand out from all the other pros was incredible. They're really, really good. So it was probably my favorite to get to watch them.
Laura Lynn says that members of the U of A Ballroom and Dance Club's competition team are trying to go to a competition in St. Louis in the spring, but they will definitely be back at the Ohio Star Ball next fall. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large, and we are definitely in the height of the Christmas season. To help us even get more into the holiday spirit, we invited 540 Express, a four-man a cappella group, to KUAF earlier this month. They sat in the Furman Garner Performance Studio with Antoinette Grajeda and myself, but when it came time for them to sing, they asked if they could go out into our lobby. If you haven't been to the KUAF lobby, high arched ceilings, and these four a cappella guys, who are Judd Burns, Jason Smith, Roger Hack, and Michael Baker Brown, they fell in love with the high ceilings.
Good acoustics.
Very good acoustics. And I should tell you that since we've moved in here, and it's 3 years ago tomorrow that we moved in to the new station, since that very first day, Antoinette Grajeda has been in the lobby and said, we should get someone to sing in here. So the moment the four of them said, Kent, do you mind if we go out into the lobby to sing? And we dragged out a microphone and put in front of it. It was four guys around one microphone. The minute they asked, Antoinette did one, and you know what I'm talking about. She kind of pointed at me like, see, I told you. Mm-hmm. And she was right, and they were right. So here is our conversation, and then a couple of songs by 540 Express. Last time you were here was fall of 2011, I believe. How long had you been together at that point?
We kind of began in July of 2011, so it was like three months.
So that was 3 months. Now you've been together about 14 months since then. What's changed?
We know a lot more music.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think we're more comfortable as an ensemble, but we're also, it's kind of funny, we're definitely better friends because of it.
Mm-hmm. The fact that we have grown so close together has helped the music to grow close together as well and become tighter and more cohesive.
Mm. Yeah, we hold each other more accountable, I would say, and it's easy to do.
Yeah, we're not afraid to say you suck. Yeah.
so
didn't
more
sound
honesty.
Good. Yeah.
More honesty this year.
Yeah. A little more brutal.
Okay, fair enough.
Has there been, I'm sure then there's been a growth in the amount of, in the number of songs that you sing and perform and know?
Jason was saying earlier today, we have probably around an hour of a solid hour of music that we can pull from at any given point in time.
Like for a set list.
Mm-hmm. And then even after that, we can add more and make for a longer concert.
Has the type of music that you guys have wanted to learn, has that changed during the past year?
Actually, it hasn't. It has expanded thanks to Michael. He brought in a style that we hadn't been used to.
Yeah, I brought in some gospel. We started singing a little bit of gospel, and we've had a lot of fun with it. And it was just, we found a new side to us and expanded our repertoire and the styles that we're singing, you know, just besides barbershop and contemporary choral.
What can be different about gospel besides perhaps the spirit behind the song? But take me through something that is different physically or mechanically for you in gospel than, say, barbershop or doo-wop.
To me, gospel has much more of a natural flow, an ebb and flow to it. There are these crunchy harmonies that in barbershop harmonies they crunch together, but it's definitely chord by chord. It's much more chord based. With gospel, it's more line based, so you see how those chords work together to kind of fit a bigger picture of what the song is going to be. It's really, really cool.
Well, and I think gospel tends to be a little bit more in your body. You know, it's lower in your body.
You're more spiritual.
It's more spiritual.
You dance a little more.
Yeah,
too.
It's you know, whether you believe what you're singing or not, it's easier to sing because it tends to be lower and rounder, and you can pretty much use your full instrument in gospel where you can't in other forms, especially barbershop where tuning is a little bit more tight and technical.
Yeah, a lot more straight tones and instead of using vibrato and things like that.
Like how Jed was saying, chord to chord, you have to really nail each note in the previous chord to really meld into the next chord and make it really flow correctly and how it's meant to be sung.
I mean, I think, you know, barbershop is really fun, but you have to really get it for it to be fun. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And whereas gospel just...
It's pretty fun from the get-go.
It's easy. You can make mistakes in gospel, and it's not... It doesn't feel like a mistake.
Because they're not mistakes, is what
right.
It turns into.
Yeah, it ends up not being a mistake. It ends up being expression.
When you guys were here last year, you were talking about an upcoming performance. During the last year, you've had a couple more performances. Do you have a favorite?
Well, I think, honestly, the most recent one that we did, we actually got to travel out to New Mexico, out to Santa Fe, and actually work with some schools in Los Alamos, kind of clinic them on things that they're working on in their choirs and things like that. And then also we had a night performance where we had a concert, but what was great, we actually held a clinic that Saturday and worked with the kids and taught them two pieces, a barbershop piece and another piece. What was the other? Prayer of the Children. And they worked so hard. And, I mean, there was like 20 of these kids, I think, all the way from 6th grade all the way to high school, you know, 11th grade.
We had a couple of 10-year-olds.
Yeah, we actually did. We had a couple.
Five-part harmony. It was incredible.
Yeah, and they...
And doing a great job.
Yeah. They could read music on top of that.
It was fantastic. And so we worked with them, and then they actually sang at the end of the concert. They sang the two pieces with us, and it was fantastic. We just had a great time. And the whole experience, I mean, us and the climate there, I was actually going through some stuff, you know, because of the climate here and all, everything, you know, with allergies that's been going on. And got there, and we were all nice and clear. And
yeah,
I mean, we really had just a good, fun concert. We just, I mean, the whole day was just fantastic.
How did you get the connection to New Mexico that's so far from here?
It's actually a guy that he's a teacher as well as I am.
Mm-hmm. Jason Rutledge.
Yeah, Jason Rutledge. Mm-hmm. And we sang with him in Schola Cantorum from the university.
In the time since we've talked to you last, the 14 months, have you tried anything that just didn't work?
Well, we have since scrapped Latin from our repertory list.
For now.
Not that we won't ever go back to it, but, you know, it seems that for the sets of our type that we do, it's a lot of crowd-pleasing songs. Latin tends to be a little bit more involved. The music tends to be a little bit tougher, maybe.
For the audience
and for us, the phrasing that you have to do in Latin, the vowel shaping has to be so spot on. And for that, probably we would do an entire Latin concert,
Well, it's also, we tend to sing in environments that aren't necessarily concert environments. We go to the farmers markets,
yeah.
We go into nursing homes, we go into
schools.
Public spaces and schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so we needed to have rep that was... That was suited to those spaces.
Well, Latin kind of tends itself to be in
more
rooms that have more reverb and
yeah.
sorts of things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, one where you can, you know, sneak breaths and things like that.
Right. And they're not obvious.
Can't do that at farmer's market in open space.
Right.
Okay, so now here we are in Furman Garner Performance Studio, which was built for musicians. You guys walked in and said, you know what? Let's go out to the lobby. Why our lobby?
It seems high ceilings are your friend. And this place has the ceilings are what, probably 14 feet high in the lobby.
I think we're going to walk out to and where you guys are going to stand by that microphone. I think
It's having an arched ceiling. It allows sound, especially from vocal instruments, to travel upwards and then come back down and provide a richer, more fuller sound. Basically, probably because of the overtone series. If your overtones are spot on, your vowels are locking in with the other voices around you. Then it allows for more sound to be enhanced and evoked.
Well, and I also think, I mean, one of the things that we are not studio musicians. We're not used to putting on headsets and going into an isolation room. We utilize our space, and we adjust physically the way we sing to the space, and we're used to a larger space.
All right, we're not even going.
Oh, yeah, there are two parts to our our instrument, and one being our physical voice and the other part being our physical surroundings around us.
Right. And I was going to say we're not even used to singing with microphones. Like, we usually just, like they're saying, use the space around us. So, you know, even using microphones is odd for us sometimes.
All right. Well, let's see what the lobby sounds like.
Perfect.
Shall
let's
we?
Do it.
Hark the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King. Peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. Joyful all ye nations rise, join the triumph of the skies. With angelic hosts proclaim, Christ is born in Bethlehem. Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King.
Glory to God. Christ is born.
He's born.
Go tell it now.
Go
tell it now. Our Savior is born. Down in a lonely manger, the humble Christ was born. And God sent us salvation, that blessed Christmas morn. Oh, go tell it on the mountain. Over the hills and everywhere, go tell it on the mountain that Jesus Christ is born. Now go tell it on the mountain, over the hills and everywhere, go tell it on the mountain that Jesus Christ is born.
Jesus Christ our Savior is born.
Go tell it now on the mountain now, go tell it now.
now, everywhere now. Go tell it on the mountain that Jesus Christ
is born.
Alleluia, alleluia, Jesus Christ is our Savior is born.
This is Ozarks at Large. Before there were Tyson selling poultry in Northwest Arkansas, before Walton's reimagined retail, before Neil's sold pies in Springdale or George's Majestic Lounge had cold beer on Dixon Street, there were Gibson Baskets. Christopher Columbus Lum Gibson began making baskets more than 120 years ago. He taught his son George. George taught his son Don. And Don's son Terry is making baskets the family way still.
My two cousins that know how to make baskets know how. We all grew up together, and the basket shop was in my backyard when I was a child. And my grandpa made baskets there, my uncles, my dad, so, you know, we just all grew up in it.
The Gibson Baskets have achieved their own kind of fame here and far beyond. The baskets have been featured more than once in Southern Living, have been displayed at the Smithsonian, and were used by then-Governor Bill Clinton as gifts to his fellow governors during a governor's conference in Little Rock. They're always made by hand in the style Lum was using back in the 19th century. Terry Gibson makes thousands annually at his place west of Fayetteville along Weddington Drive. This week, with a warm fire crackling inside and his roosters crowing outside, he explained how a white oak tree can become a basket.
And you split the tree, you keep splitting it down as many times as you can until you get a pretty thin board.
Before the trees can be split, the bark has to be stripped clean. Terry follows the same procedure for this process that the three generations before him used.
Exactly. This is exactly the same method. Growing up as a kid, I remember big piles of this bark all laying all around.
He concedes there has been one change since the 1880s. Terry uses a chainsaw to fell the oak trees he uses. The crosscut saw of old has been retired. But there are plenty of other tools at Terry's disposal that have been used for a very long time. Take, for example, the fro he uses to split logs into smaller logs.
It's an old-timey tool, and this particular one here was plowed up in a field and handed down to me, so this is probably 100 years old.
The fro is a heavy, tapered chunk of metal sitting inside a wooden handle. He places the tool inside the wood and smacks the metal with another piece of wood. After just a couple of firm taps, the log divides into smaller, even pieces.
I always try to split it right down the middle.
Then he splits the smaller log again, then again reducing the wood into smaller slivers that can be taken into the same shop he's been using for more than 24 years.
This is called the split bench. This is what it's like, a wooden vise is what it is. And put your board, this is called a shaving horse. And what I'll do is I'll take this.
This is a long blade with handles on either side that he takes in his hands as he sits on a bench-like contraption.
This original part of this I made when I was 17. This has been replaced because you whittle on it, but this is pretty old.
Terry rakes the long blade across the top of the smaller wood piece he's brought in from outside. Over and over, he shaves the wood into a streamlined strip, the white oak bending slightly each time the blade cruises over the bark.
Now, I know you've been doing this for more than four decades, but I get a little nervous seeing that blade get that close to your stomach.
Well, you just don't think about it.
Okay, sorry I brought it up.
I have cut myself before, mostly on my fingers. I never have cut my stomach, but...
When he was a boy, Terry could earn a nickel for each strip of wood he trimmed for his grandfather. His grandfather, by the way, made baskets until he was 89, so Terry made quite a few nickels.
And I could work for my uncle, my dad, my grandpa, you know.
Right.
And I just picked up the little bits of it here and there, and then all of a sudden, by the time I was 12 years old, I was doing everything.
Next, the wood is tightly secured into a sort of vise called a split bench that Terry's used for more than a quarter century. Holding his knife sideways, he peels the outer band off of the wood. Each of these steps narrows the wood so it can eventually be woven into a basket. The Gibson family tradition has about 50 varieties of baskets, different sizes and shapes. Each has its own name, picked by Terry's great-grandfather. The basket called the large round egg basket was big and was used for carrying round eggs. The two-pie basket could carry two homemade pies. These particular strips are just the right size for a pie basket. Terry takes them back inside the house. There, Terry's wife, Connie, she also makes baskets, holds a block of wood that will serve temporarily as the base of the basket in progress. The strips will be placed on top of the block, and then other strips will be interlaced over and beneath, creating a signature pattern that will make the basket strong enough to carry whatever can be fit inside. Connie says the weaving process is one reason some Gibson baskets have lasted longer than a century.
No nails in our baskets, but all our baskets have nail holes in them, because that's how you hold it together.
For each of the 50 or so types of Gibson basket, there is a separate block to put under the wood to begin the weaving process. Each basket then slowly comes to life as Terry or Connie gently lace the wooden slices in, over, and underneath each other.
You have to split an upright piece like this. That makes your over and under weave work out.
So you're weaving a spiral all the way up. If you don't split that, it's like a Missouri basket. A Missouri basket has one weave around and it stops. And you weave one around and stop. This gives you a continuous weave all the way around.
While the Gibsons create thousands of baskets every year to be sold at farmers markets in Bentonville and Fayetteville, some are sold at retail places like the Ozark Folk Center in Mountain View, and a very few stay in the Gibson home. The last basket Terry's father ever made is above the fireplace, and hanging nearby are a few other baskets Connie says are too special to let go.
That was our first son's basket, and he slept in that while he was young. This one here was Terry's first one that he made a swivel handle one, and that's where the handle sways back and forth, and that was our picnic basket. This one here is our daughter Sarah's Girl Scout basket, and I was the Girl Scout leader for the Girl Scouts of the Brownies, and every time I took that basket to the meeting, every time, and the girls was always, "What's in the basket? What's in the basket?" So that was very special. And this one here was my first basket that I made that's called a wood basket. And that's where the sides are a lot lower. The ends are a lot lower than the sides. Nowadays we're calling that a flower basket because a lot of people do cut flowers. And used to, they put that by the fireplace and put their kindling in it.
There's another basket near their living room. One pulled out of a barn and estimated to be at least 80 years old. The color has warmed to a chestnut brown, but otherwise it looks like it could be one Terry is making this afternoon. Terry says he comes in contact with people, or they seek him out, who have had a Gibson basket for decades, maybe even longer, handed down from parents or grandparents. And he says should any of those baskets made by his family need a repair, he knows precisely how to fix them.
And I do have people that's bought baskets from our relatives and stuff, and it's very old baskets. And sometimes the binding will be broke, or their dog might have chewed on it or something. And I repair a lot of old baskets. And I hear a lot of stories like, my mother bought me this basket when I was in high school, or I've had it 50 years. And, you know, it's kind of cool to repair those old baskets that, could have been my grandpa, could have been my great-grandpa, could have been, any one of the family.
Right. Their fingerprints literally on that basket.
Through the years, they never signed their names on them. Here in the last 10 or 15 years, I've started signing all my baskets because people started telling me they wanted it signed. So,
since every one of those Gibson baskets is made by hand, and all of them these days at this home and workshop, demand is always ahead of supply. Terry and Connie don't take many vacations, and they say rare is the 2 or 3 day period where they're not weaving or cutting or finishing baskets.
What we usually try to do is I'll cut enough of these pieces to make 5 or 6 baskets at a time.
You can find out more about the multi-generational business at their website, GibsonBaskets.com.
Well, here's an impossible question to answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How many Gibson baskets have been made?
Oh, my gosh. There's no
used to try to keep up with it. There's no way.
I would say at least 100,000, and that's just a ballpark, probably low estimate.
This is Ozarks at Large.
Later today on This American Life, when Adam was a kid, Christmas was magical. In his family's house, he and his siblings could hear but never see Jekko the Elf. They met a mysterious Christmassy figure named Klaus Hofer and Kris Kringle.
He broke out one bone, and he said, "This is one of the bones from the original Rudolph. You know, I use it to call the reindeer."
Lights, camera, Christmas, later today.
This American Life, just ahead at 10 o'clock here on KUAF.
It is Sunday, December 23rd, 2012. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We're happy to have with us Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspaper. She had prepared for the end of the world just in case, but here we are.
We're just happy to be here.
Yeah, we are.
On a Sunday morning.
That's right.
On any morning, we're happy to be here. Okay, every year, What's Up counts down the top entertainment stories.
Yes.
The things that we think have changed the face of the entertainment scene in Northwest Arkansas.
This year.
Okay. Last year was an easy one. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Last year, the opening of Crystal Bridges, that
piece
was a
of
no-brainer.
Cake.
Okay.
You can check out last Friday's What's Up for numbers 10 through 6.
Uh-huh.
So we're getting 1 through 5.
No, you're getting just number 10 to whet your appetite.
Okay.
Next Friday will be 1 through 5.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that after the first of the year.
Okay.
But the number 10 story for 2012 is the closing of the Good Folk House and the new Pick and Post concert series.
Right. It's no longer Good Folk. Mike has changed it to Pick and Post.
But it still exists.
Yes, it does.
And it exists in a big way on December 29th. When Fred Eagle Smith will be in town for the first of the real big time pick and post concerts.
Is that Saturday?
29th is a
Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yes, it's Saturday.
Okay. Saturday.
Because the 31st is Monday.
Right. Yes, right.
Talk to Fred Eagle Smith, who said he really hates house concerts.
But
he loved the Good Folk House, and he knows that he'll love the new venue, which is the Fayetteville Underground.
And he and Mike have been friends and contemporaries for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Some great quotes. He said, "It's all about Mike. Mike can't help it. He's just Mike. Whatever Mike's going to do is going to be Mike."
That's well put. Yes.
So he said he started playing Good Folk, because Fayetteville was a stop between here and there. And it is this time, too. He's headed to a New Year's Eve gig in Texas. But he said, after a while, it became, anytime I can play with Shirky, it's one of my favorite stops. So he will be there. They may not stay landed at the Underground.
Right.
Mike's not sure.
It's a series now. It could be
anywhere.
Right.
But he will be there on the 29th to kick off the Pick and Post Presents with Fred Eagle Smith. Showtime is 7:30.
And let's just point out, just for some people who might not remember or it may have slipped their mind, the Underground has moved as well over
Correct.
The last few months and is now what direction that would be?
Southwest.
Southwest corner of the Fayetteville Square.
Tickets are $20 and you can find out more at 409-1224. Also this afternoon, Period of Adjustment continues at Theater Squared. I still have not seen this show and I'm so sorry I haven't.
Today may be the day for me.
But they tell me it's a comedy. It's written by Tennessee Williams. We'll see if I believe that. 2 and 7 o'clock at the Nadine Baum Studios. And the last performance of the season's Last Nutcracker, performed by the Moscow Classical Ballet at 2 o'clock at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville.
And the holiday options really gear down after sundown tonight.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Because Monday is Christmas Eve day, Christmas Eve, and then Christmas on Tuesday.
Well, but that's when you go and you see the
movie
square
theaters.
In Fayetteville.
Sure.
Have you seen The Hobbit yet?
I haven't.
I haven't either. We need to talk.
We do.
Go. Have fun.
All right.
Don't tell me all about it.
Do you like The Hobbit?
I will confess this. I saw the first of the Lord of the Ring movies, and about 9.5 hours in, I said, when is this going to end? It's
Cretin.
Not for me. I read The Hobbit, and I liked The Hobbit. That's what I thought I was seeing when I went to the first Lord of the Rings movie, but they just
You didn't know
that.
About the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
How do you
trilogy?
Work with him?
I don't know.
And you've known him all these years, and I didn't know.
Here's the
I don't
thing.
Know.
And I'm not saying, oh, it's for nerds or anything like that. I went in with high anticipation, but it bored me to tears. bored me to tears.
Well, I'm excited about The Hobbit, and I'm glad to have somebody that's excited also.
See,
and
we were just happy at the first Lord of the Rings movie.
You okay there?
Yeah.
See, she's excited.
Yeah, she's so excited. She's knocking around furniture. Okay. Well, you guys have fun at The Hobbit, and
Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to you.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Join us later today, beginning at noon, for the Fort Smith Chorale's performance of An A Cappella Christmas, a concert recorded live in Fort Smith, November 29th. Each year, KUAF features the Chorale's Christmas concert, and this year's edition is sure to bring in that Christmas spirit with an hour of non-stop seasonal vocal music. An A Cappella Christmas, that's today at noon, here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large, tomorrow Christmas Eve, and tomorrow when we go to the Daily Show for the next week, something we've done the past couple of years, Christina, you, me, Antoinette, Timothy Dennis,
Jacqueline Froelich,
and Katie Hendrickson.
Right.
We all gather around, we get inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, and we talk about some of our favorite stories that we did in 2012. We'll start that tomorrow, and it'll go all of the week up through next Friday.
It's a lot of fun because we get to talk about why we chose to do certain stories or what interested us
right
throughout the year.
And let's see. I know that you have a story about a restored prairie that you picked out. And we'll hear some live music that was recorded inside Furman Garner Performance Studio. Time for Three, this
right
classical ensemble that came early in 2012 to Walton Arts Center and played some schools. Antoinette and Katie invited them into Furman Garner, and they sat down.
They had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, and they played. And we'll hear, we had the first live in front of a studio audience, Ozarks at Large ever, at Fayetteville Public Library. We'll hear some music from that, Steel Wheels.
With Steel Wheels, and then also, who else was?
Oh, boy. The whole list, the way we do this is we all sit down and pick out about, 10 or 11 of our favorite stories, and we have to narrow it down to just five or six each. And I know there's some more music and some snippets. An interview that I did with Martin Short, because he played Walton Arts Center earlier this year, and was gracious enough to give us an interview. But not just people coming through town, but a lot of stories that we did around town.
Right. Timothy Dennis, I know, had a story about the new Retrocade
yes
at Evelyn Hills.
Yes.
So he just joined us in August, but he managed to do a few
right
things. Yeah.
And it seems like we tend, all of us, to pick the ones that gave us our favorite sounds. You'll hear a lot of sound.
Well, we're radio.
Well, exactly.
Sound, I mean, we have to tell a story with sound a lot of the time. So.
And then a week from this morning, the 30th of December, kind of to end that whole favorite week, we'll be back with Weekend Ozarks Large, another sort of favorite show, more of the music that we recorded inside KUAF in 2012.
Right.
Most of it in the Furman Garner Performance Studio, but I know Jay Wagner, a singer-songwriter, performed inside
Antoinette's office.
Yeah, yeah. Studio 123, and I had Jonathan Trawick perform inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. So that's some of our favorite music, and that will be on Weekend Ozarks at Large a week from today. And these are fun to put together.
They are. We enjoy it.
We do. And it reminds us how much we've done in the past 12 months.
Right.
A lot.
All right. Well, this is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Fayetteville, Springdale, Fort Smith.
Prairie Creek.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Christina.
Thank you.